Thank you very much, dear listeners of iRab English Radio Color Islam page, for listening to this episode of the program Ulama's Speech, which was the English translation of a short Farsi speech by Hujjatul Islam Qarati. To find out more about this program, please log on to our website, parstoday.ir, Color Islam page. We leave you in Allah's care and goodbye.
A diverse range of programs, spirituality, youth, Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, how to get rid of diseases in our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So we are here on A to Z, and we are talking about how to get rid of our diseases in our Islamic lifestyle. Now, of course, we're not talking about medical advice. We're not talking about these physical diseases that an individual comes about, you know, like the cold or a flu or asthma or diabetes, God forbid, or you know, cardiac problems. So we're not talking about those diseases. And just kind of on a side note, though, please, you know, refer to proper medical personnel and receive proper medical attention for these kind of things. But always, when it comes to Islamic medicine, as a part of our Islamic lifestyle, is this idea of prevention, right? So even in the physical diseases, prevention is really important, you know, and there's certain things that you can do, kind of avoid, you know, things that have a lot of sugar, avoid things that have a lot of fat, avoid things that are like fast food, avoid things that are high in sugar content like soda, you know, and of course, you know, walk and have a relatively, you know, healthy lifestyle when it comes to exercise in an appropriate manner, you know. Don't go crazy and start exercising from morning until night, because that also has negative and harmful repercussions and consequences. But anyways, we're talking about getting rid of spiritual diseases. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we are talking about how to get rid of these diseases, and we're not talking about physical diseases, we're talking about spiritual diseases. And we had very quickly said that these spiritual diseases are perhaps more dangerous than physical diseases. Now, you know, if for example we have some sort of physical disease that we can't get rid of, well, you know, eventually when you die, you get rid of that physical disease. But spiritual diseases are such that they continue into the next world. And that's an aspect that makes them more dangerous than even physical diseases, right? But when it comes to the spiritual aspect and the spiritual diseases, these are things that continue on into the next world. And that is something that, you know, we really do need to get rid of. Now, we're talking about these diseases. What do we need to do? Well, first and foremost, we need to, sit down and think and list these kind of diseases that we have and diseases that Islam speaks about, whether, for example, it's lying or backbiting or gossiping, watching bad things or listening to bad things or using swear words or listening to swear words. There's a whole host, greed and jealousy and carnal desires. There's a whole host of things, you know, out there which, are diseases and they're spiritual diseases. You list all of these and then one by one, you find ways to be able to solve these spiritual diseases. One thing, though, before we end the program is that make sure that you know and you believe from the bottom of your heart that you are able to fix these spiritual diseases, of course, with the help and the grace of the Almighty Allah.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
The Limelight.
The Zionist regime prison authorities are refusing to return the body of author and activist Walid Daqa to his family following his death in detention on April 7th. In this regard, we have taken a look at world media websites and news agencies for further details. Stay tuned for more. The Electronic Intifada wrote, Daqa had spent the majority of his life in Israeli custody and was one of the longest-serving Palestinian prisoners. He had been terminally ill with cancer. Israeli regime authorities abducted Daqa when he was 24 years old in March 1986 for allegedly participating in armed resistance as a member of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, a leftist political party. He was sentenced to life in prison, which was later reduced to 37 years. He completed his 37-year sentence in March 2023. However, in 2018, his detention was extended by 2 years by Israeli regime authorities, citing allegations of smuggling phones into his cell. His new release date had been scheduled for March 2025. Daqa hailed from the Palestinian city of Baqa al-Gharbiya in the occupied territories. He authored multiple books in prison. A Palestinian woman named Sana Salama visited Daqa for an interview and they subsequently became a couple. In 1999, after persistent efforts with the prison authorities, Daqa and Salama managed to wed in a legendary celebration at Ascalon Prison in southern occupied territories called Israel. They were joined by a select few of Daqa's fellow prisoners, as well as some of their families and friends. Israeli regime prison authorities denied the couple visits despite their prolonged struggle for the right. Despite repeated campaigns by human rights organizations urging Daqqa's immediate release, the Zionist regime insisted on keeping Daqqa imprisoned even as he was fighting a rare case of bone marrow cancer. The Palestinian Human Rights Organizations Council, PHROC, which includes a number of groups, sent an urgent appeal last year to the UN Special Procedures, a body that handles such cases, calling for Daqqa's release. The council said Daqqa was facing imminent deteriorating health conditions due to Israeli prison services' policy of deliberate medical neglect. Amnesty International similarly called for his release on humanitarian grounds to allow him to spend his remaining time with his family. Amnesty is now calling on Israel to release Daqqa's body. Erika Juvena Rosas, Amnesty International Senior Director for Research, Advocacy, Policy and Campaign, said, "Even on his deathbed, Israeli authorities continue to display chilling levels of cruelty against Walid Daqqa and his family, not only denying him adequate medical treatment and suitable food, but also preventing him from saying a final goodbye to his wife Sana Salama and their four-year-old daughter Milad. Salama could not embrace her dying husband one last time before he passed. The Zionist regime authorities must release Daqqa's body to his family without delay in order to give him a peaceful and dignified burial and allow them to mourn his death without intimidation." Israeli occupation forces, however, stormed and dismantled the funeral tent where people gathered to mourn Daqqa. They abducted some of his relatives. Large numbers of Israeli regime forces also raided the home of Daqqa's family. Israel's far-right National Security Minister Itamar Ben-Gvir publicly endorsed these brutal actions. The minister gave kudos to the Israeli police responsible for dismantling Daqqa's funeral tent. The minister wrote on X, formerly Twitter, "We are not crying tonight over the death of Daqqa." He expressed regret that Daqqa died the supposedly natural death, preferring that he get the death penalty. Daqqa's death marks the 15th Palestinian fatality in Israeli detention since October 7, 2023, with the Palestinian Prisoners Club attributing these deaths to torture, incarceration, starvation, and medical negligence. Meanwhile, Palestinians abducted from Gaza and detained in a prison camp are subjected to routine amputations due to severe cuff injuries. This disturbing revelation comes from an Israeli field doctor who had worked at the Sereh Taiman facility, an army base situated between Beersheba and Gaza in the southern Negev region. Israeli regime authorities abducted Palestinians from Gaza before transferring them to other prisons. The army camp has been turned into a Guantanamo-like prison, according to the human rights group Euromed Human Rights Monitor. The group added detainees there are held in extreme conditions akin to open-air chicken cages without access to food or drink for long periods of time. Just this week, two prisoners had their legs amputated due to handcuff injuries, which unfortunately is a routine event, the physician wrote in a letter to Israeli leaders at the time, which was reported by newspaper Haaretz. Palestinian detainees at Sereh Taiman camp are handcuffed 24 hours a day, the newspaper Haaretz reported. This policy came into effect after a medical staffer was allegedly attacked. Handcuffing, which the physician says is on all four limbs, is causing severe injuries that require repeated surgical interventions. Detainees constantly handcuffed are fed through straws and are forced to defecate in diapers. Israeli regime authorities had initially employed plastic handcuffs, but have now replaced them with metal ones. At least one detainee had their hand amputated due to prolonged wear of plastic handcuffs, according to three sources cited by the Israeli newspaper. An Israeli regime military spokesperson declared that no criminal offense was found during an investigation, deciding not to initiate a military police inquiry. Even when patients undergo major operations, they never remain in the hospital for more than a few hours and are transported back to Sde Tayman regardless of post-operative observation. Typically, only one doctor is available at the detention camp, often an orthopedist or other doctors. The physician wrote, "This ends in complications and sometimes even in the patient's death." Euromed Monitor interviewed Palestinians from Gaza who had been abducted by Israeli regime forces and reported being subjected to abuse, beatings, threats, stress positions, and other forms of mistreatment that the group says amount to torture. One detainee told the human rights group, recounting being moved from one location to another, "Every new place had a unique method of torture." He said he was struck in the head by an officer, adding that the severe cold prevented him from sleeping. Another detainee described being forced to completely undress and enduring severe beatings with rocks and rifle butts. He also stated that Israeli regime authorities threatened to rape her family. A female detainee shared a similar account, saying she was forced to undress. She told Euromed Monitor, "Every time I was stripped, with the female soldiers putting their hands on me while male soldiers occasionally made rude comments." Nearly 1,900 Palestinians have been abducted from Gaza and are still held in the Zionist regime prisons as of this month. This figure does not include those detained at the Sde Tayman facility, which typically accommodates 600 to 800 individuals.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the pitch.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamati.
Islamati.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners from all around the world. Welcome back to a new episode of
Youth Station.
I am Bita.
And this is Mustafa.
Yeah. And once again, we have the chance to be next to you, the youth generation, which I think it's a pleasure to be, first of all, a candidate at this generation and then have the chance to talk to this generation. So, dear brother, as you know, we're living in a world that, specifically girls, are really into fashion.
It's not only girls.
And trends. You know, yeah, for sure, it's not only girls, but mostly girls. About the clothes and appearance, and boys about cars, I don't know, races.
I don't know. Have you seen people's haircuts these days? They look just like soccer players.
Yeah,
so it's not just
them.
Girls. Like,
yeah,
guys,
I think it was just a traditional example. And, you know, the thing is, sometimes I feel like I'm behind all these trends and all these things that are on the social media. I was saying that sometimes I feel like I'm out of date. Mm. I feel like I have to keep track of all these fashions and trends, but it's impossible.
Why do you feel like you need to do that? Why do you need to keep up with those?
Sometimes it's the pressure of society on me. I feel like, for example, if I don't do rhinoplasty or no surgery, then it means that I'm not beautiful anymore.
So, yeah, I think the thing, it has its positives and negatives, right? In my personal opinion, you know, I don't really care about fashion or trends.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't bother
me. Good for you, seriously.
It doesn't bother me at all if, you know, whatever's going on, if I'm not a part of it, it doesn't really personally bother me. Maybe when I was maybe younger, I was definitely into these kind of things, you know, following fashion and trends. But now as I've gotten older, maybe I realize it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
Right? Like, as long as you're happy, you know, as long as you're satisfied, then who cares, like, what you're wearing, what you're not wearing with.
You know, what is the justification of all the youth generation about this fashion and so on? They will tell you that, for example, this fashion, this trend that you choose is your appearance, and your appearance is a part of your personality. So when you have this appearance, it means that you have this personality. And this is their excuse in order to keep track of this trend and fashions. And they feel like this is a necessity of life to be upgraded.
I've definitely been in that place, so I can understand, like, what you're saying, but I'm no longer in that place, right? I've sort
of... Yeah, I get it. You're looking at it from a different
dimension. I would say it's almost like... It's a bit of immaturity, almost, to feel that way.
Yeah,
you know, it's... Because if you're going to be that way, you know, you're only causing yourself more... What would you say? You're causing yourself to be anxious, and you're causing yourself to be always, like, wanting more.
Yeah.
Right? I don't know how to explain it.
Yeah, I know. You're always running for a kind of achievement that you cannot never achieve.
Yeah, and a big part of course, you know, fashions and trends is corporations, by the way, and businesses.
Yeah,
right.
Business. Where do these money is always
there. Yeah, so they're really looking for... So in a way, you could almost see it that they're trying to fool you, and they're trying to get your money out of you.
Yeah.
Right? The way how we look is definitely, of course, in Islam, it's important, right? The way we appear, that how we dress. Nobody's denying that, you know, you shouldn't care about those things. But if you're only doing it for the sake of showing others, or because that's how society is wearing clothes or whatever, I think you're causing yourself harm at the end of the day.
Actually, I was reading something really interesting somewhere that the more beautiful and elegant you are, it means that the more superficial your personality is, because the only dimension you're working on is your appearance. Mm. And this is the same thing about the youth generation, unfortunately, that we are actually spending a lot of time on making our appearance beautiful, flashy, and, you know, we want to show off. And actually, this is to some extent natural for the young ages and immature people. But, you know, it's becoming detrimental, I think, in this era. And let's talk about the harm of this phenomena that we're experiencing after a short break. Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Youth Station, and Brother and I are talking about these trends and fashions and modes. And in this part, we were supposed to talk about the consequences and the harm and detrimental result of this behavior and phenomenon in our society.
Yeah, and like I said, you know, one of the sources of this issue is definitely social media and businesses. You know, where are we getting, like, you know, certain fashions? It's from like clothing designers and things, right? One of the biggest harms, like, I don't see it as maybe much here in Iran. Maybe you can correct me if I'm wrong. But in some other countries, people have become really brand conscious. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I remember growing up, like, people would wear only Nike shoes. And at the end of the day, they're making money out of it. Right? That's the end goal of these organizations.
Yeah.
Have you heard of Pavlov's dogs experiment?
No.
you know, you probably heard of it.
Yeah, yeah, maybe.
Okay, whenever you study marketing, it's one of the things that's used a lot, or yeah. Even psychology. Pavlov was this Russian scientist, I don't know, quite a while ago. And he did this experiment where he would bring food for his dogs, okay? And at the same time, before bringing the food, he would ring a bell.
Oh, yeah, I've heard
you know that,
that,
right?
Yeah, I know, for
so,
sure.
After a long time, what happened when he started, you know, what do dogs do when they see food? They salivate, right?
Yeah.
After a while, he didn't bring the food, he would just ring the bell, and dogs would start to salivate.
Yeah.
So he showed that if you bring two things together for a long time, people start associating those two things
exactly.
together. So where is that used in marketing? For example, you'll see, like, you know, somebody smoking a cigarette on a, you know, man on a horse, like, you know, he looks really
yeah.
brave and manly, and he's smoking a cigarette. Does smoking have anything to do with being a man or bravery?
No, for sure, no.
But when we keep seeing those images together, we start, that's why a lot of guys smoke, because they want to look cool, they want to look, you know, manly.
Yeah, exactly.
So you're being fooled by marketing companies all the time, right?
Yeah.
That's what fashions are, being fooled by marketing companies. Is that something you want to be in a position you want to be in?
No, for sure, no. It was
right?
a really beautiful, actually, a way of looking at this issue, because it's seriously challenging. We don't care about it because, for example, we say, okay, it's going to pass, but it's not going to pass. It has its own consequences in you at every age. For example, I went to university at the first of the year, and about half of the population of the girls of the class had rhinoplasty. So what does that mean? It means that there is a trend of doing that, and this trend is actually working, you know?
Yeah, and I think it's really sad that that, you know, girls feel that way, you know, that, or men even who are doing it. I think that's really sad because I don't think it really matters that much.
Yeah.
You know, especially once you, you know, once you get married, and if you speak to married couples, they'll tell you these things stop mattering after a while.
Exactly.
It's really maybe at the beginning you think it's really important, but when you've, you know, look at your own parents, I would say, you know, unfortunately, I'm sure a lot of these girls, their moms have also gotten.
Yeah.
Right?
Exactly.
So that's the difficulty with it, but in my personal opinion, it doesn't matter at all.
You know,
it's not important.
Unfortunately, the thing that will happen to these people is that they will lose their self-esteem and self-confidence one by one. And to fulfill and to nourish this feeling of lack of self-confidence, they do something, they buy new clothes, they, I don't know, do rhinoplasty, they do this and that. But at the end of the day, they are sadder. You know, they are more depressed. I think we have to correct this phenomenon and this challenging crisis of our era. We change our mindset. I mean, changing your appearance without changing your brain is not useful, I believe. Let's go for a short break to get refreshed, then we're going to come back.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back. This is Youth Station, and we were talking about trends.
Well, we've talked a lot about the negatives of it, right? But I think there's definitely positives as well of trends sometimes, right?
I believe we can use it in a positive way.
Definitely. It can be used in a positive way. And for example, you know, we may be seeing that a positive trend right now among people. So we're gonna support for Palestine, right? You see that on social media, for example.
Exactly.
Or protests. So there's definitely positive ways of using trends, you know, and fashions.
And another way of using it in a positive way is that we all, as human beings, need role models. Okay, we need someone to take pattern from them and to actually put them into consideration in real life. And we can use these tools of advertisement, these tools of social media and globalization in order to share and exchange these true beliefs and these correct role models for all people around the world.
So yeah, those are positive ways of using trends. I mean, another way I think fashion or trends can help is, for example, you know, everything, when we talk about things going viral these days, it sort of falls into that sort of same category, right? And we see, for example, on Twitter, people are using hashtags, right? And I would like to, you know, even our sort of scholars, for example, Ayatollah Khamenei, you know, he's told the youth, like, use social media and their trends to promote your own ideas.
Exactly.
Right? He said you have to be a soft war warrior, right? You have to be a soldier for the soft war. So we definitely recognize the importance of these things, and how to use these tools and these fashions responsibly is what we should be focusing on.
Exactly.
Not like, you know, what clothes am I wearing? You know, does it match the lady?
I believe the key of solving these kind of problems is media literacy. Mm. We have to work on the knowledge that we have about the media, the trends, and we have to have a tinge of the knowledge of understanding society. And when you understand the trend of society and the way that the brain of people works, then it's all. You can have your influence on people and have effect in a way that you want.
Yeah, you know what that reminds me of, by the way? You know the application TikTok? So
yeah, I know it.
So
who,
it's a
who doesn't know?
So it's a Chinese-made application,
yeah.
Right? So in China, if people use TikTok, they see different trends on it versus, you know, if they're in America.
Yeah.
So in China, if you use TikTok, the people will see like science, engineering, medicine being promoted. Whereas if, you know, in America, they're promoting dancing, music, like all sort of like really superficial things.
Yeah.
Now, why do you think China has done that? Because they want their youth to become doctors, engineers, or more educated. And in America, they want to cause harm to that society.
Exactly.
Okay? They want to keep them sort of as consumers, right?
Yeah.
So these fashions, they're being used in a way that we many times don't even realize.
Yeah.
Like, it's psychological warfare. That's
exactly.
Something else that you know, Ayatollah Khamenei has said, that is this is psychological warfare.
It is.
So you really have to be really, really, like, smart, I think, and not fall into this sort of, like, warfare.
For sure.
Yeah.
So thank you, brother, to give our listeners a gist of what we talked about here, is that for sure we are in a middle of a combat, of a war, spiritually both and physically, and we have to be very careful and attentive about the information that we are allowing our brain to digest every day. And these trends has so many negative effects on our youth generation, on our country and society, but the point is, there is sometimes you can change threats into opportunities sometimes. And this is the time that you have to change these trends into your own will and promote Islam, promote the truth of religion and lifestyle.
And stop wasting your money on silly clothes and things.
Yeah.
Okay.
Nice point. So I think that was all the time we had for today's episode, brother. Thank you for being with me, dear listeners, being with us. And assalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you dear youth will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillah, Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great
Wassalamu alaikum warahmatullahi wabarakatuh. Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif,
Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif, Ya Latif,
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
in the limelight.
Despite growing pressure on the United Kingdom to end its arms sales to the Israeli regime, the British Foreign Secretary David Cameron says London's position on exporting arms to the Israeli regime remains unchanged. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Sky News has covered this story and tells us more. British Prime Minister Rishi Sunak has doubled down on exporting arms to Israel, stressing that no change has been made with regards to selling arms to the occupying regime. Rishi Sunak stressed recently that arms exports to Israel would continue as before and the flow would not be suspended, echoing Foreign Secretary David Cameron's remarks a day earlier that London's policy of selling weapons to the Israeli regime remains unchanged. Prime Minister Sunak, in an interview with British phone-in and talk radio station LBC, said, "The United Kingdom has a long-established process relating to arms export regime, and we review these things regularly. Despite growing pressure on the United Kingdom to end its arms sales to the Israeli regime," the British Prime Minister stressed, "that's led to no change. Actually, none of our closest allies have currently suspended existing arms licenses either, so we continue to discuss these things with our allies." Sunak claimed that London has a strict set of criteria and an obligation to act in accordance with what he called legal assessments when it comes to arms exports. His remarks came as a majority of Britons have called on London to no longer give arms to the Israeli regime. The Israeli military has massacred tens of thousands of innocent Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip since 7th of October last year. They fear that Israel may be using British-made weapons in military actions that violate international laws in the Gaza Strip. Prime Minister Sunak also dismissed suggestions that civil servants might refuse to process licenses, stressing that it would not be appropriate for officials to stop work relating to the sale of arms. He added, "That's not something I'm familiar with. I don't think that would be appropriate. We have a civil service code. All civil servants should work according to the civil service code." Earlier this month, Israel's deadly strikes on the non-governmental organization World Central Kitchen in central Gaza drew worldwide condemnations. Three of the World Central Kitchen aid workers who were killed by Israeli airstrikes were British nationals, who were all UK military veterans working on its security team. Recently, three former senior British judges joined over 600 members of the British legal profession in calling for London to stop its arms exports to Israel. Britain supplied £42 million worth of arms and equipment to the Israeli regime in 2022. The British tabloid newspaper The Sun has also reported on the same story. Despite growing pressure on the United Kingdom to end its arms sales to Israel, British Foreign Secretary David Cameron says London's position on exporting arms to the Israeli regime remains unchanged. At a recent press conference in Washington alongside US Secretary of State Antony Blinken, the top British diplomat said the British government would keep shipping arms to Israel after reviewing advice from the nation's lawyers. His remarks came as a majority of the British public have called on London to no longer give weapons to the Israeli regime. The Israeli military has massacred tens of thousands of innocent Palestinians in the besieged Gaza Strip since 7th of October last year. The British public fear that Israel may be using British-made weapons in its military actions that violate international laws in Gaza, which has also been blocked by Israel from having access to water, food and electricity. The British Foreign Secretary David Cameron said, "I have now reviewed the most recent advice about the situation in Gaza and Israel's conduct on their military campaign. Their latest assessment leaves our position on export licenses unchanged. This is consistent with the advice that I and other ministers have received." However, David Cameron refused to elaborate on what legal advice London was given when assessing whether or not to restrict arms sales to the Israeli regime. The British newspaper The Guardian has also covered the same story. More than 100 British MPs have urged the British government to immediately ban arms sales to Israel as the occupying regime continues its brutal war of genocide on the Gaza Strip. The appeal was made in a letter signed by 130 parliamentarians recently, calling on the British Foreign Secretary David Cameron to act as other countries like Canada, who have halted arms exports to Israel. The letter argued that business as usual for UK arms exports to Israel is totally unacceptable, noting that an F-16 fighter jet made with British parts was probably responsible for bombing British doctors in Gaza 3 months ago. The letter further noted that the British government has suspended arms sales to Israel during the two previous wars in Gaza. It said, "The scale of violence committed by the Israeli military is vastly more deadly, but the British government has failed to act." The letter, coordinated by Labour MP Zara Sultana, was signed by 107 MPs and 27 peers, amid signs that the Israeli regime intends to ignore the recent United Nations Security Council resolution that demands an immediate ceasefire in Gaza. A total of 46 Labour MPs have backed the call, as has almost the entire Scottish National Parliamentary Party, the SNP. Zara Sultana said, "With the Israeli regime now seemingly disregarding the UN Security Council ceasefire resolution, it is again violating international laws and making the case for an end to arms sales impossible to ignore." She added, "The British government must finally uphold the rights of the Palestinian people." Heed this call from 130 cross-party parliamentarians and immediately end its arms sales to Israel. Recently, the United Nations Security Council adopted a long-awaited resolution that demands an immediate ceasefire for Israeli aggression against Gaza Strip. The resolution was put forward by 10 non-permanent members of the UN Security Council. The United States abstained from the vote, and 14 other UN Security Council members voted in favour of the resolution. Palestinian resistance movements have welcomed the resolution, but Israel's Minister of War, Yoav Gallant, said Israel will not stop its attacks on Gaza. Human rights groups in Britain have specifically called on Prime Minister Rishi Sunak's government to halt arms exports to Israel, citing concerns about potential war crimes being committed against Palestinians in Gaza. In December, a letter from a consortium of rights groups highlighted Britain's contribution of approximately 15% of components in an F-35 stealth bomber aircraft used to bombard the Gaza Strip. It also referenced international and British laws, including Article 6 and 7 of the International Arms Trade Treaty, as well as UK's strategic export licensing criteria, requiring the British government to halt its arms transfers if a substantial risk of serious violations of international humanitarian laws or human rights legislation exists. The letter documented unlawful attacks by the Israeli military on various civilian targets since 7th of October last year, including on medical facilities, residential buildings, evacuation convoys, bakeries, and water and electricity infrastructure.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel
مجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered on June 23, 2015 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution, the day when we entered into the nuclear negotiations, we had an acceptable and important advantage. We felt that we were entering the arena with a strong hand. Our advantage on that day was that we had managed to produce 20% uranium while we were under sanctions, and while all nuclear powers have refused to give us 20% uranium for the Tehran Research Center. On that day, we needed radiopharmaceuticals. Then, we managed to turn this 20% uranium into fuel plates and to use it. The other side was stunned. There is a long story about this, which many of you may be aware of. During a series of long negotiations, they did not agree to give us, that is to say, sell us 20% uranium, and they did not allow anyone else to sell it to us either. As a result, we said that we would produce it inside the country.
دنیای اسلام یک نسخه امروز دارد و اون اتحاد.
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
Our youth, our scientists, and the group of people inside the country who are diligent, optimistic, and self-confident managed to astonish the other side, and thus they produced 20% uranium. And you know that, perhaps, I have said this on another occasion as well. In the process of nuclear enrichment, the important and difficult part is moving from 3-4% towards 20%. Reaching the 90% phase from the 20% phase is a very simple move. When someone obtains 20%, the other phases will be easy. The difficult and important part is the part from 3-5 to 20%. Our youth managed to take this difficult path. They produced 20% uranium and fuel plates. This was one of our achievements and advantages. We entered the negotiations with this morale, the strategy of resistance and persistence in the face of pressures worked. The Americans acknowledged that sanctions do not have any effect as was pointed out in this meeting. This is a completely correct analysis. The Americans reached the conclusion that sanctions do not produce the desired effect anymore.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You've guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh, Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. Guide me from all the ways.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pourreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Aminolemi, Kabul.
Shahanabad, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Described as an act of self-defense, the Yemenis regard the extensive missile and drone strikes carried out by Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps on the Israeli-occupied territories as a response to the Israeli regime's assault on Iran's consular building in the Syrian capital, Damascus.
We consider the Iranian strikes against the Israeli entity a legitimate attack and a response to the Israeli attacks that violated Iran's sovereignty by hitting its consulate in Syria. The Iranian attack is a legitimate move to punish Israel and is part of measures to stop the regime's ongoing crimes since October 7.
The public sentiment aligns with the official stance as locals overwhelmingly endorse the Iranian strikes, stating that the Israeli regime and its allies only understand the language of force.
The Iranian attack is supported not only by Yemenis but also by all free people in the world. The Iranian response sends a message that Iran's capability is real and that all it was seeking was to liberate Palestine and stop the crimes by the Zionist enemy. Today we are facing an exceptional operation because Iran had not carried out an operation of this scale since the end of the Iran-Iraq war. Iran has been characterized by patience and deliberation due to the way it deals with hostile states. This is the first time that Iran has carried out a military operation against its enemies from within Iranian territory. This attack was successful, came at the right time to put the Zionist enemy in its place, and proved that Iran is capable of blowing up Israel.
Over the past few years, Yemeni-Iranian relations have strengthened, especially during the U.S.-backed war on Yemen, initiated by the 2014 revolution. This military campaign aimed to restore a U.S.-aligned former government in Yemen.
People here believe that the recent Iranian attack against the occupied territories significantly impacts Western powers, demonstrating unity among the resistance forces in the region. They view the attack as the beginning of the end for the Israeli regime and its supporters. Abdul Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Pro-Palestinians in France gathered the day after what was reported to be the first peaceful night in Gaza in 6 months. The reason? The night before, Iran launched a historic missile retaliation against Israel, which prevented Tel Aviv from continuing their attempt at genocide and ethnic cleansing. At the demonstration, there was widespread approval, support, and even gratitude and admiration for Tehran's counterattack against the unprecedented bombing assassination at an embassy.
I'm not an anti-Semite, and as a Muslim, I want us all to live together peacefully, but I see Iran's attack as something good on their part. Iran is the only major country which has had the courage to attack Israel and defend Palestine's innocent civilians. This war can easily stop if Israel can finally realize that they are attempting a genocide.
Those who are occupiers do not have the right to legitimate defense, but Iran does have the right, and they used it to defend Gaza as well. Israel bombs and assassinates people constantly. How can people forget about what Israel has done?
Protesters contrasted Iran's actions with those of the French foreign minister last week. After mentioning the possibility of placing sanctions on Israel over Gaza, he immediately backtracked the next day in front of Parliament.
The French government is quite their accomplice in the genocide that Israel is waging right now. Why aren't there any sanctions despite all these deaths? And when France talks so much about defending human rights, it's simply shameful.
French forces claim to have contributed to Israel's defense. In a major blow to perpetual Israeli hopes of escalating the violence, Washington has already refused to join any potential Israeli attack on Iran. It's uncertain if the cycle of Israeli assassination and Iranian retaliation is now concluded, but Israel has already returned to indiscriminate bombing and mass murder in Gaza, despite 6 months of global outrage, the murder of 34,000 Palestinians, and 76,000 injuries.
Will Israel pursue an even wider war? Will more Arab nations be inspired to join the cause of defending Gaza? What's certain is that many are happy that, for one night at least, the guns aimed at Gaza's civilians finally fell silent. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
Pakistanis are showing staunch solidarity with the Iranian retaliatory strikes against the Israeli-occupied territories. Social media platforms overflow with messages of congratulations for Iran's effective response to Israel's atrocities, hailing Iran as a courageous champion of Muslim states willing to confront a Zionist regime, especially following months of atrocities against the Gaza Strip.
We are proud of Iran for taking a stand against Israel's aggression. The Palestinians have been suffering for decades, and it's time someone took action to protect them. Iran's attack shows that they won't tolerate the oppression any longer.
I fully support Iran's decision to strike back against Israel. The Palestinians have been living under siege for decades, and it's high time someone stood up for them. Iran's actions give hope to oppressed people everywhere.
The Pakistani government has echoed both the sentiments of its citizens and voiced grave concerns over escalation of tensions in the Middle East. Islamabad underscored the Israeli blockade of Gaza as a significant factor contributing to the recent wave of tensions, emphasizing the urgent need for international intervention to prevent further escalations in the region.
Iran has done the right thing legally and morally, because Iran has retaliated against Israeli unwarranted aggression and attack on Iranian diplomatic installation in Damascus. And that was a violation of UN charter and international law. So what Iran has done is the right thing. They have responded in kind, and they have taken the battle to the aggressor, and they have hit Israel.
The people of Pakistan emphasize the urgent need for global intervention to halt the escalation of conflict in the region and call for an immediate ceasefire in Gaza.
Iran's attack on Israeli-occupied territories has garnered widespread support from Pakistanis, particularly due to their perceived alignment with the plight of people in Gaza. The warm reception of Tehran's operation by the Pakistani nation highlights its desire for a more assertive response to Israel's ongoing atrocities against Palestinians. Nasir Kazmi, Islamabad.
German police have stormed the pro-Palestine conference in the capital Berlin and arrested a number of participants. The Palestine Congress was an important event for the Palestinian solidarity movement in Europe. It was set to be held in the German capital from April 12 to 14. The participants aimed to denounce Israeli apartheid and genocide and Germans' complicity in the genocide of the Palestinians in the Gaza Strip.
We are the Palestine Congress. We accuse the Israeli state of carrying out genocide. And we accuse the German government of supporting, of abetting, of making possible this genocide.
On Friday afternoon, several hundred activists assembled in South Berlin to attend the conference. Soon after the conference started, it was interrupted by the city's police, which had dispatched more than 900 police officers to the area. Outside the conference venue, police officers arrested a man for hoisting a Palestinian flag on a building. The participants inside the conference venue also faced repression. Even the registered journalists were refused entry by the police officers who had been deployed inside the conference hall.
I was in the list, and as the moment as I came, they told me I'm not allowed to enter because there were too many people already inside.
The first part of the conference focused on the history of Palestine.
May marks 76 years since the Palestinian Nakba, 76 years of colonization, of forced exile. However, next month also marks 76 years